Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for June 26th in the year of our Lord, 2023. This is hour two of two, and the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, including the checks and balances, to restore the republic peacefully in the traditions of our founders. We reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Today is this day in history. In 1945, we sadly signed the UN Charter. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, with me this hour. What do you say to that horrible day in history, sir?
Yeah, don't like that day in history. You know, they did, when they find that thing, they made sure that there was nothing in it at the time that would compel the state to do anything that was contrary to the U.S. Constitution, right? I mean, they were very explicit. And then over time, that they've relaxed that. And so there's no, and in fact, the U.S. Supreme Court, they took a case about that. I think it's the Bricker Amendment, I believe. Yeah, the Bricker Amendment, named for a congressman who put in, you know, this language that would protect the state from having to do something that the executive agreed to. And then I don't think that amendment passed. And then there's a case that went, maybe two or more cases, that went to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the U.S. Supreme Court said you have to do what the treaty says. And so it caused a lot of concern. Or maybe I just reversed those. It's been a while since I've thought about this, but maybe the Supreme Court came first, and then the Bricker Amendment was introduced, but failed to pass. So, yeah, we're still in that hazy area, that gray area right now. I mean, you and I both know that states don't have to do what's in some treaty somewhere, because they're sovereign, and you can't tell, you know, sovereign's not commanded what to do. A sovereign is sovereign. But there's a gray, because it's a gray area, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on states to comply if, in fact, you know, a foreign treaty is approved by the executive and this isn't clarified, you know, in written language. So, yeah, I'm not excited at all about being a member of the UN. I think we ought to get out. I think we ought to quit funding the thing. It's just caused more problems around the world than you can shake a stick at, Sam.
No question about that, ladies and gentlemen. And later in the broadcast, we're going to talk about an incredible article by Ron Paul. We need a peace president coming up. And I think it directly relates to that discussion as well, because on one hand, they want you to believe the United Nations helps with peace and helps, you know, nations work together. It's done nothing but the opposite, folks. We've had more war and rumors of war since the United Nations. The League of Nations was rejected, but they came back with the United Nations and forced it upon us, as they so often do. We'll get to that coming up in the broadcast. But the mission of Campaign for Liberty is to promote and defend the great American principles of individual liberty, constitutional governments, sound money, free markets, and a constitutional foreign policy. And Lowell Nelson really had his campaign management school last Saturday. We talked about it coming up. It was 2 days ago, and it turned out incredible. Lowell?
Well, I'm happy to report that it was very successful, Sam. This campaign management school is held in Sandy, Utah, at the Salt Lake Community College. We filled 31 of the 36 seats in the class. Kirk Shelley from Oklahoma flew in and taught the all-day class. It went from 9 in the morning to 5:30 in the evening with a lunch break. I hosted the class, so I was responsible to provide lunch in the middle of the day and then snacks and water throughout the day, of course. So, you know, people were amply fed. They took notes. It was like drinking from a fire hose, I think, for most of them, because there is so much great information downloaded, you know, given out through the day there. People were taking notes furiously, and we wore out their hands people were coming asking for more paper because they ran out of note paper. I mean, it was pretty awesome. You know, in this school, this campaign management school, Sam, we learn how to run an effective campaign, and we learn how to win elections to public office. You know, our instructor, Kirk Shelley, he has managed hundreds of campaigns over the years at all levels and in many, many jurisdictions. We're talking community level, even in his own neighborhood, or HOA level. You can get practice there, the community level, county level, state level, and national. In fact, he even has done some international campaigns recently, so he's spending a little time over in Europe. So this guy, he has the battle scars of experience. He was very open about what he's worked on, and also about what worked and what didn't work. He's very, very open. He doesn't want us to make the same mistakes he has made. And he says, look, if you just do this, you'll succeed. This is how it's done. And he has, it's incredible, like a 90%. It was 89 point something, Sam, but roughly 90% win rate. Okay, so if he takes on a campaign, 9 out of 10 times he wins. So you talk about credibility, it's pretty amazing, gentlemen. You know, in our class, we had, I don't know, half a dozen candidates for municipal office this year. I mean, they're right in the throes of their election season right now. We had several people who are eyeing legislative seats in the Utah House or Senate. We had several in there for school board seats, you know, school board elections. So it's very municipal. We're not talking, I mean, most of these folks were not, you know, high-level congressional campaign. In fact, I don't even think we had one congressional candidate in there. These were low, what we call low-level or close to the people, municipal campaigns, school board races, and a couple, you know, legislative seats. So, you know, what did we talk about? Well, we discussed calendaring. How to evaluate yourself as a candidate. What are your strengths and your weaknesses? What are the strengths and weaknesses of your opponent? How do you analyze your district, and how does that affect what you do in your campaign? Talked about raising money, running campaign events. We even talked about how to end a campaign. Sam, how many people do you know teach you how to end a campaign wisely? I mean, that was a pretty important piece of this training. Many, many great topics, related to these things I just mentioned. And so, folks, if you missed this class but still wanted to attend, you can catch it on October 21st. I will talk about that class again in October and September, you know, the months leading up to that class. But for now, I want to promote the Political Leadership School, which will be held on July 29th, the very last Saturday in June. This is the school that I've been bringing to Utah for the past 15 years. I bring it every year in the dead of summer, which is usually a politically inactive season. It's always on the last Saturday in July. This year, that's July 29. And in this class, we learn how to persuade politicians to do the right thing. So, you know, basically, the Foundation for Applied Conservative Leadership, or FACL for short, they have two classes. One is the Political Leadership School, where we train activists to influence politicians. And the other is the Campaign Management School, where we train candidates and their helpers how to win elections. So those are the two different schools. There is a little bit of overlap, but it's just, you know, a basic understanding, a foundation, so to speak, on which you learn the rest of the material. Now, the early bird price of this class, this July 29th class, is $45. And that early bird price is good through next week. So I'm talking to you this week, and of course next week I'll hope to mention it again. But you need to sign up this week or next in order to get that early bird price. After the early bird deadline, the price goes up $15 to $60. And still, I mean, that's a nominal cost. I mean, this whole course would cost you hundreds of dollars, probably about $1,200 course if you put a commercial price tag on it. But the foundation brings this class to you and makes it available pretty much at cost, because we want liberty-minded people throughout the country to learn this material. There are classes being taught all over the country, right? There's like half a dozen every month, and in various places around the country. So if we can do the same, you know, today what we did last week, Sam, we will put in the show notes for today's show a link. So you can just click the link and register for that July 29th class, the Political Leadership School. It, too, will be held in Sandy, Utah at the Salt Lake Community College. And so, and I have to throw in this quote, Sam, just to quote someone who attended the school on Saturday, just 2 days ago. This is what she wrote. She wrote back to me yesterday. She said, quote, "I wish more conservatives had that attitude about politics and holding politicians' feet to the fire. They have stopped answering to us because we have forgotten who works for who." End of quote. I thought that was a great statement, Sam, a really insightful comment about what we learned yesterday or 2 days ago there in that campaign management school. Sam?
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Two incredible classes. We'll always keep you up to date on what Lowell's doing. One of the things that I love about campaignforliberty.org and Lowell Nelson, you know what? They absolutely don't just talk. They take action, solutions, education, and then go out and get it done. I dig it. Quick pause. More in seconds on your favorite talk station.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is your favorite talk station, the Liberty Roundtable on loveandliberty.net. Sam Bushman is your host. My name is Lowell Nelson. I'm his guest this hour. Happy to be here. Happy to be sharing some information which I view as important and relevant to our work in promoting the cause of the sacred cause of liberty, today's society. This article that Sam mentioned at the outset is written by Ron Paul. His column last Monday really was spot on. We need a peace president. Boy, do we ever.
And let me just stop you there. I love almost everything Ron Paul writes. I'm just telling you right now, he's so spot on, has been for decades. But believe it or not, this is one of my favorite columns from Ron. And the reason why is because it really highlights how important, you know, we can say, oh, the president doesn't matter. People above him run the president, this, that, and that, and the other. But you know what? One man can make a big difference, or one person can make a huge difference. The power of one is incredible. And he highlights that we need a peace president. We need someone who will stand nobly, boldly, independently for a humble foreign policy. Ron's been teaching that principle forever, but this is one of his best columns, Lowell.
Oh, I totally agree, Sam. I remember back during his presidential campaigns of 2007, 8, and 2011, 12, that he often referred to the Republican Party policy of a humble, he called it a humble foreign policy and no nation building. I mean, those were two keystone cornerstones, really, of the Republican Party, or had been for years. I mean, right? I mean, at least that's what they said. Now, they didn't do what they said, because we know that they've been involved in coups.
Sadly, it used to be reality. Now it's more precept than practice, right?
Exactly. But you have to return repeatedly to the architecture. That's why we refer to the Blueprint for Liberty all the time. We go back to the Constitution and talk about, this is how it was. This is what the ratifiers had in mind when they gave this document the legal force, you know, when we formed this country, when the states decided to confederate and become a republic of confederated states, what we call a federal republic. You know, this is what they believed, and so it's important to return to these principles if we want to return this country to the way it was. We have to understand what they had in mind, and so I love the fact that he refers to these important principles of no nation building and no intervention foreign policy, right? No interventionist foreign policy. But it turns out that, you know, after Bush got into the White House, this is in 2000 through 2008 there, the war hawks got a hold of him, and he did exactly opposite of what he promised to do. See, Bush promised that he would stop nation building, but of course he didn't do that. Anyway, Ron begins his column this way. He says, most people agree that we're closer to nuclear war than at any time since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. And some would even argue that we are closer now than we were in those fateful days when Soviet missiles in Cuba almost triggered a nuclear war between the U.S. and the USSR. Now, the lies we were told back then were if we didn't stop the communists over there, then the dominoes would begin falling one by one until the Reds ruled over us. You know, better dead than red, you know, some people would say. The tensions were very high. And Ron continues his column. He says, quote, fortunately, we had a president in the White House at the time who understood the dangers of nuclear brinksmanship. Even though he was surrounded by hawks who could never forgive him for aborting the idiotic Bay of Pigs Cuba invasion, President John F. Kennedy picked up the telephone for a discussion with his Soviet counterpart, Nikita Khrushchev, which eventually saved the world. End of quote. And so JFK, basically, he agreed to remove U.S. missiles from Turkey if Russia removed their nuclear missiles from Cuba. And, you know, diplomacy worked well for the world back then, and you know, Ron and I and many others believe it would work well today, because tensions are high today too. But Ron Paul continues, quote, it is all too clear that we do not have a John F. Kennedy in the White House today. Although we no longer face a Soviet empire and communist ideology as justification for taking a confrontational tone toward Russia, the Biden administration is still dragging the U.S. toward a nuclear conflict. Why are they putting us all at risk? The same old domino theory that was discredited in the Cold War, if we don't fight Russia down to the last Ukrainian, Putin will soon be marching through Britain. You know, that's the mantra today. Do you remember, Sam, when Biden said we would just send uniforms and medical supplies to Ukraine? And then we start sending anti-tank missiles, multiple rocket launchers, Patriot missiles, Bradley fighting vehicles, and millions of rounds of ammunition. Well, quoting Ron Paul again, the Biden administration announced last week that it would send depleted uranium ammunition to Ukraine. which poisons the earth for millennia to come. Rumors are that long-range ATACMs are to be delivered soon, which could strike deep into Russia. Apparently, he continues, F-16 fighter jets are also on the way.
Well, and the sad part is not only are we gearing up backing Ukraine, but China's gearing up backing Russia. This is really serious, folks. One misstep at this point or one escalation could change the whole game and whole discussion. We need a peace president. Ron's right about this. The sad part is I don't see anybody on the national stage right now that could be that person. The closest might be JFK Jr., or RFK Jr. That might be the closest, but I don't know anybody on the national stage that would really take us into a peaceful plan. Trump might be better than Biden. I'm not so sure Trump can avoid it entirely as well. He gets too hot-headed, and he doesn't understand humble foreign policy enough. We've got to have a new player on the national stage for this to be, for us to get this lull.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Sam. Boy, do we ever need someone who understands that peace is more important than ego, right? I mean, the peace in the world is more important than exercising your muscle and extending your empire and the bravado that goes along with telling other world leaders that you're the man in the room. You're the life of the party. You're the one that whose word goes, right? I mean, these guys are getting into high level politics like this. Their ego is so huge, it's so big that they just love to bully and confront each other. They're big bullies, really. When you come right down to it, they're swamp bullies. I look back at the days of George Washington. I look back at the founders of the country, and they understood the importance of a humble foreign policy. John Adams, I remember, said, "Don't go in search of monsters to destroy." That's the real policy that we should be following today. You can't right everything, Sam. You can't. I mean, I realize there's injustices sprinkled across the planet, but you and I, we can't go and fix everything. I think we start with our families. We start with our families. That's our main responsibility. We support our families. We ensure that we don't fight. We don't, beat each other up. And then we have concentric circles beyond our family and maybe our extended family, maybe our neighborhoods, maybe our communities. We don't fight. We don't beat people up. We don't take their stuff. And if we adopt that policy ourselves, one by one, if every family did that, we would have the attitude, the mentality that Ron wants to see in a president here, where we don't go in search of monsters to destroy, we don't go beat people up, we don't go enforce with a barrel of a gun, this idea of liberty and democracy throughout the world. That's not what we should be doing. And again, this harkens back to the UN, the United Nations. They're out there in front trying to enforce, peace on everybody. And it's an interventionist attitude that leads to the problems down the road. Sam.
You got that right. Now, I find this interesting. There's an article and a talk given by Russell M. Nelson. He's the leader of and the prophet of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He wrote this, or it's a written talk now or a written article, but it was a talk when it was given in a general conference for the church. It says, peacemakers needed. And here's what it says. You have your agency to choose contention or reconciliation. I urge you to choose to be a peacemaker now and always. Boy, howdy, wouldn't that make for a wonderful foreign policy? Lowell Nelson, Sam Bushman, continue in seconds on your radio.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Tim Berg. The sentencing phase in the Tree of Life synagogue shooting trial is beginning in Pittsburgh on Monday. Robert Bowers was found guilty earlier this month on all 63 charges in the 2018 mass shooting at the Squirrel Hill Synagogue that killed 11 worshipers. In the first part of the sentencing phase, a jury will consider aggravating circumstances to determine if the defendant is eligible for the death penalty. The cleanup is continuing today after a tornado touched down just south of Indianapolis, Indiana, on Sunday. One man describes to Fox News the fear of looking for any possible damage to his home.
When you walk out, you see the houses around you, you see the damage, and you don't want to look up. You're scared to look up because you're thinking, oh, no, what's happened to our house?
The sheriff in the county where the tornado touched down says damage covers a large area and that several neighborhoods and homes have been destroyed or damaged. The White House and President Biden say they're keeping an eye on the situation in Russia.
President Biden has spoken with Ukraine President Zelensky and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau about the weekend's events in Russia. The White House said the leaders affirmed their unwavering support for Ukraine against Russian aggression. This comes after a short-lived rebellion by the Wagner Group, a private Russian military organization led by Yevgeny Prigozhin. The Kremlin reportedly reached an agreement with Wagner to drop the charges against Prigozhin in exchange for the group ending its insurrection.
USA News' Lance Pry reporting. Southwest Airlines has reached a tentative deal with the union representing mechanics and aircraft inspectors. The agreement announced Friday must be approved by some 2,800 workers. The airline is still negotiating deals with pilots and flight attendants. Monday night's Powerball jackpot is set for an estimated $440 million. This is USA News.
The roar of our engines, the pump of our heartbeats, the pedal to our metal, the sparks that ignite us, the pistons that push us, the passions that drive us. From the feelings that move us to the places that pull us on the roads that unite us. With nearly 6,000 stores and over 17,000 auto care centers, NAPA has America's largest network of parts and care, here to keep you firing on all cylinders.
Hi, I'm Ronnie Deutsch, and if you or your business owe money to the IRS, I've got great news for you. Tax laws have changed. Billions of dollars are earmarked for IRS Fresh Start programs. And if you qualify, you can literally save tens of thousands of dollars. Listen, I know what you're going through. Call me if you want to speak with a tax attorney or tax professional for free.
800-284-9275. That's 800-284-9275.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, here to Liberty Roundtable Live on your Internet Talk Station. This is Lowell Nelson. I'm a guest of Sam Bushman this hour here on loveandliberty.net. I found this article by Lou Rockwell. I often go to lourockwell.com to get the latest information and news and thoughts regarding world events and national events, local events as well. But Lou wrote this article because, and I find it fascinating because it reminds us about the real truth about World War II. You know, we grow up hearing that World War II was a good war, right? It was a necessary war. We had to stop Hitler from conquering the world.
Yeah, big old lies everywhere, lol.
If we didn't do that, Sam, you and I would be speaking German today. That's what they tell us. That's what I grew up hearing. And, of course, they say this in order to justify their plans to start a nuclear war against Russia and China. And Sam astutely observed in the last segment that really this is the Ukraine-Russia conflict is a proxy war of the U.S. versus China, when you come right down to it. U.S. versus Russia and China. Well, World War II was in fact very different from what we're told it was. The winning side always issues propaganda, and so that they we don't get the real straight scoop. In other words, but Lou Rockwell in this column gives us the truth about World War II. So, and it's helpful to remind ourselves about these truths. Number one, prior to our entry in World War II, the American people were overwhelmingly opposed to entering the conflict. Why? Well, number one, because of the non-interventionist foreign policy that was the founding policy of the United States and have remained the foreign policy of the United States for more than 100 years, right? This is that non-interventionist foreign policy that Ron Paul talks about all the time and that is in the mission of Campaign for Liberty. And the second reason the American people did not want to enter World War II was because it was a horrible waste of men and money that had been expended on Americans' intervention into World War I, not to mention the massive destruction of liberty that came with that war. See, war and debt is the biggest enemy. The biggest two ways you can lose your liberty is through war and debt. Anyway, that the first reason, number one, we need to remember, Americans did not want to enter World War II. Now, the second thing, the second truth about World War II was that FDR intentionally provoked and maneuvered the Japanese into the attack on Pearl Harbor. Now, a lot of people don't realize this. I imagine, Sam, people who listen to you over the years, they understand this already, but if you haven't heard this, the particular truth before, it might come as a big surprise because we're taught our whole lives long that, you know, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor without provocation. Well, we provoked them, all right. We gave them, I don't know, there's a great book, Robert Stinnett, the Secretary of Defense or the Assistant Secretary of Defense at the time, wrote a memoir describing what we did, what the U.S. did to provoke the Japanese into attacking us at Pearl Harbor. And so, I mean, we had, well, that's another story. We could spend the whole hour just talking about that. We better not get into that. But suffice it to say that one truth about World War II was that the U.S. provoked the Japanese into attacking us. Why did we do that? Because we needed to manipulate the American people into agreeing to go into World War II. The third truth about World War II is that Hitler never had the ability to conquer the U.S., much less the world. So this idea that if we hadn't killed Hitler, then we'd be speaking German today, just total bunk. I mean, Hitler's forces, they couldn't even cross the English Channel to conquer England. And so at the risk of belaboring the obvious, writes Lou here, it says it would have been militarily impossible for Hitler's forces to cross the Atlantic Ocean and successfully invade and conquer the United States. Now, the fourth truth about World War II. Mainstream historians and newspapers have long pointed out that defeating Germany saved Europe from Nazi control. But it was always clear from the beginning that Hitler was moving east, not west, toward the Soviet Union. Now, this is a point, Sam, that I had forgotten until I read this article last night. The Soviet Union communist regime considered whose communist regime he considered the real enemy of Germany, right? This was Hitler, right? He thought the Soviet Union was his real enemy. And so he was moving eastward, and it turns out that England and France declared war on Germany, not the other way around. Germany was not moving west toward England and France. England and France declared war on Germany. That's a significant point and pretty significant. Now, the reason that England declared war on Germany was to honor the guarantee that England had given to Poland. But it was an empty guarantee because England knew that it lacked the military capability to free the Poles from German control. Well, at the end of the war and ever since, you know, the mainstreamers have waxed eloquent about how we defeated the Nazis. But the operative word is we, right? We. And it turns out that we includes the Soviet Union, which was ruled by one of the most brutal communist regimes in the world. It was the Soviet Union that ended up controlling Poland and Czechoslovakia and all of Eastern Europe and also the eastern half of Germany. So yes, the Poles were freed from Nazi tyranny at the end of the war, only to be made to suffer for the next 45 years under communist tyranny of the Soviet bloc, the USSR. So, you know, we may be told that World War II is a victory for freedom, but you ask a Pole or the Eastern Europeans how they felt, they sure felt differently about, you know, so-called victory, because they found themselves under the thumb of one of the most brutal communist regimes in the world in history. Okay, the sixth truth about the World War II is this: virtually no Jews were saved by the war. By the time the war was over, almost all of them were dead. Of course, it should be kept in mind that when Hitler offered to let German Jews leave Germany in the 1930s, the Roosevelt administration, like all the other nations around the world, said, well, you can't come to the United States. Why? Because of anti-Semitism, the very same anti-Semitism that afflicted Nazi Germany. You Google Voyage of the Damned for more information. That book is Voyage of the Damned for more information. And so it's very hypocritical for us to say, well, Hitler, you know, he was the reason all the Jews died, when in reality, countries around the world, because of anti-Semitism, this feeling of hate for the Jews, they wouldn't allow the Jews to come into their country, even though Hitler was willing to allow them to leave Germany. Very interesting piece of history about World War II, Sam, that I
yes,
forgot.
It is. And by the way, what's interesting about this in my mind is that, you know what, Hitler was going east, not west. And the problem is, when you point that out, we're really saying that means Hitler wasn't near the threat to us that we're told that he was, and that it wasn't a global kind of discussion. He had already kind of overspent and over-allocated his resources, and he would have probably self-imploded already, and those other countries could have stopped him for invading their lands. I agree it was gruesome, and I agree it was evil and all that kind of stuff. The problem is, when you point that out, people kind of think that you're a Hitler apologist or that somehow you're defending Hitler. Neither of those are true in the reality statements that we're making, though. Just because we're saying he wasn't the threat that we, you know, they told you that he was, the victors get to write the history, right? They get to paint the narrative. They're lying to you on all this. But just because we point that out, and that we didn't need to go to war, and that we provoked Japan into this, and that that doesn't mean that we're defending or apologizing for Hitler in any way. That isn't true. So don't mix the topics, people, is the point. A humble foreign policy is the answer. Great. We never intended or never will back Hitler or any of the other criminals around the world where mass murder occurs. But that doesn't stop us from highlighting the truth. He was headed east, not west. And you know what? He would have self-imploded without our intervention. I'm convinced, lol.
Yeah, I think you're right, Sam. This non-interventionist, this humble foreign policy, that is the key. And I like the very first point Lou gave there, was that, you know, that was our policy for 100 years. That was the U.S. policy. It was foundational, you know, to our country. And World War II changed that. Ever since World War II, now, we have been intervening in the affairs of other countries, other sovereign entities. And so World War II was a big, big turning point in our policy, and sadly so. Sam?
All right, let's go ahead and take the break, or let's go ahead and skip the break, sorry. There's two quick reads that I want to do. Number one, Donald Trump is God's man. Proof is being persecuted and prosecuted by the beast. Walt Disney is God's man. Upon his death, the beast moved to buy Disney. They've turned it into literally an evil bastion controlled by the beast. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to stand up for liberty together. And if we want to have solutions, it starts with recognizing evil for what it is. Armageddon is heating up. You know what? We need to stand for what is right. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries, brought to you by ConfederateChurchOfChrist.com. Also, I want to let you know this half hour is brought to you in part by Freedom Fest. I'm going to be at Freedom Fest live July 12th through the 15th in Memphis, Tennessee. Highly recommend you join me there. I'd love to see you. FreedomFest.com to learn more. They've got incredible movies. They've got incredible booths, incredible speakers with all kinds of topics ranging from financial to personal preparedness and literally everything in between. If you love liberty, FreedomFest.com is for you. All right, back to you, Lowell. This is serious business, and I want to point out that just because we tell you the truth about what happened That doesn't mean that in any way we're backing or supporting Hitler. Quite the contrary. But what we're saying is this. We need a peace president. Okay? We need to avert these crises with a humble foreign policy, folks. We need to realize the truth about World War II. More and more evidence is coming out all the time about all the wars that we've been in, the truth related to them. But what I like about this one is Lou writes the column himself, Lou Rockwell, at lourockwell.com. Most of the time we quote Lou Rockwell articles because they're from his website, but other people pen them. In this case, it's Lou himself, and boy, howdy, him and Ron Paul are a duo of truth-telling regarding the proper role of limited, humble foreign policy governments and the answers of how we should proceed going forward, Lowell.
Absolutely right, Sam. You know, truth is treason in an empire of lies. And yet Ron Paul and Lou Rockwell and others, they don't flinch when they give us the truth. You know, the regime may call it treasonous, but it is the truth. And so I just appreciate so very much being reminded of these truths about World War II. Like I said, it was a big turning point. And one of the things that happened after the war is that the U.S. regime immediately transformed Hitler's enemies into the bad guy, right? Soviet Union,
yep,
who helped
us defeat
Hitler, became our official enemy, and it began the Cold War. And look at how many interventions have occurred during the Cold War. Look at how many people have died, hundreds of thousands of American men, as well as countless injuries. Have been lost in the U.S. interventions in North Korea and Vietnam and in other countries around the world. I think I mentioned one, Sam, a book where in is described 193 regime change operations since 1950 in
it's
which the U.S., CIA,
folks,
and so forth have been involved. Yeah. And so
now, let's be clear, if I was president, which I'll never be because I'll never run, but if I was president, you know what? I would hire Ron Paul and Lou Rockwell to be in charge of my foreign policy, Lowell.
That's exactly right. I would hire Thomas Jefferson. I would hire George Washington. And I would go back to the very basics, the fundamental, humble, non-interventionist foreign policy that enabled this country to become so great in the first 100 years of its existence.
We need a 180-degree turn internationally. We also need that domestically, Lowell.
That's true. So how are we going to accomplish that domestically? Well, here's three ways. Actually, Michael Bolden at the 10th Amendment Center, he posted this article on his website Saturday, just 2 days ago. I want to mention it. I love the 10th Amendment Center. .com because of the great information that they put out. They too are truth tellers. They remind us about the origins of our country. And he gives the top four things to nullify. I've chosen three to mention today, the top three things that we should nullify. And why do I mention nullify? Because nullification is something that we ought to be doing more of on the state and local level. We're supposed to be sovereign. Every state in the union is a sovereign entity. And where that, if it's not forbidden in the Constitution, right, and if we subscribe, if we're part of the union, then we have agreed that the general government will do a few things and that the states will do all the rest. Well, what we find today is that the general government is usurping authority of the states. And it's intervening in state domestic affairs. You know, think of Roe v. Wade, right? Think of the mandatory vaccine that they tried to impose. Look at the lockdowns. I mean, those things should never be driven by the general government. Those are state domestic issues. Well, yeah, so what are the top three programs we ought to nullify, in my opinion? And in Michael Bolden's opinion, the first three that he listed, number one is the central bank. The Federal Reserve, he says, is the engine that drives the biggest, most powerful government in the history of the world. As Mike Meharry notes, monetary policy run through the Fed enables much of the U.S. government's excessive borrowing and spending. if the federal government had to rely on tax receipts and borrowing that it could actually repay to fund all of its unconstitutional wars, foreign aid, and domestic spending, it would be dead in the water. End of quote there. And that's absolutely true. You know, if we were actually paying our taxes in gold and silver coin, like the founders envisioned we would, in fact, we didn't have taxes. Let me correct myself. We wouldn't be paying taxes. Basically, the tariffs were the only way the general government was to be funded. And if we constrained the general government to the size of the tariffs that they could roll, you know, bring in, then the general government would be very, very small, and we wouldn't have the bloated you know, government that we have today. The size and reach of the general government today is just truly incredible. Okay, so the central bank is number one. That's the first thing we should nullify. We do that by going back to real money, sound money, you know, gold and silver specie, you know, whatever has intrinsic value that is precious, meaning there's not a lot of it. That's the money we ought to be using. And number two, unlimited federal supremacy. This is the second thing we ought to nullify. Michael Bolden writes, sure, we can point to distorted views of the supremacy clause, claiming the federal law is always supreme over conflicting state laws rather than only when in pursuance of the Constitution. That certainly is a big problem. But what we're talking about here goes much deeper, he writes. The prevailing view is that when people think the federal government has violated the Constitution, they ask the federal government if the federal government thinks the federal government violated the Constitution and generally abide by whatever the federal government decides. End of quote. Now, you may think that I misquoted him by saying the federal government over and over and over, but it really is comical what we do there. If we think the federal government has overstepped its bounds, what do? Well, we sue them in court. It ends up in a federal court that ends up asking the federal government whether the federal government has violated the Constitution. Well, what's the federal government going to decide? They're going to decide with themselves every time. It's like asking, a wolf, two wolves and a sheep, you know, what's for dinner, right? They decide, well, we're going to eat the sheep. Well, it's like the fox in the hen house. It just doesn't make any sense. But that's essentially what happened. And it turns out that the founders did not think that the federal government could decide the extent of its own jurisdiction. In 1776, December of that year, Thomas Paine wrote The Crisis, which started out with the famous line, these are the times that try men's souls. But he went on to describe what they were fighting against. They were fighting against unlimited power. He wrote this, quote, Britain, with an army to enforce her tyranny, has declared that she has a right not only to tax, but to bind us in all cases whatsoever. Sounds like her general government, doesn't it? And if being bound in that manner is not slavery, then there is not such a thing as slavery upon the earth. Even the expression is impious, for so unlimited a power can belong only to God. End of quote. That's what Thomas Paine wrote in that circular in 1776. And so Michael Bolden continues on here. He says, merely having the ability to choose new people every few years to wield all that power is a complete betrayal of the principles of the Revolution. That's why Thomas Jefferson later wrote, quote, an elective despotism was not the government we fought for, end of quote. That was the end of Jefferson's quote. Now, continuing on, Thomas Jefferson understood very well the foundation of this Constitution of our country. He wrote in the Kentucky Resolution of 1798, quote, the government created by this compact, meaning the Constitution, was not made the exclusive or final judge of the extent of the powers delegated to itself, since that would have made its discretion and not the Constitution the measure of its powers. End of quote. So I really want to hit this, I want to hammer this home, because states should be the ones deciding the extent of the power and authority of the general government, not the general government itself. Right, that is so key. Okay, third thing I want to mention, the third big thing we need to nullify is, according to Michael Bolden here, all attacks on our natural right of self-defense. Mercy Otis Warren hammered home the idea, the view of the founders and old revolutionaries, that the right of self-defense is a natural right, not a gift from government. Self-defense is a primary law of nature, which no subsequent law of society can abolish. Government can only get away with restrictions and abolishing if the people let them do it. So, rather than waiting on government to give the people permission to do what they already have a right to do by nature of their birth, it's up to the people to learn how to exercise their rights, whether the government likes it or not. End of quote. And so, folks, you know, and so Michael Bolden ends his column here saying, folks, we can turn this around. It really is up to us. And in fact, Michael Bolden finished his column with these encouraging words. And then, of course, I love it when Sam comments about this. But he says, ultimately, it's up to the people to protect and defend their own constitution and their own liberty, whether the government wants them to or not. It won't be quick and it won't be easy. But as Thomas Paine told us, those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it. End of quote. Sam?
Not only will it not be easy, and it will be tough, it will be worth it, ladies and gentlemen. It is something that we can do. It's something that whether we win or not, I don't need to worry about. I know God wins. And I know that if I align myself with God Almighty and I'm on His side, then I win. And I don't need to worry about how that's all going to happen. I don't need to be in charge. I just need to ride for the brand, so to speak. Okay, we need to reject unlimited federal supremacy. It isn't true. It's a lie. We need to reject the Federal Reserve. That's how they can, you know, perpetuate their warring agendas, is with unlimited fiat money. If we chain them down with the Constitution and we reject the central bank and go to constitutional currency, if we reject their unlimited federal supremacy, and most importantly, if we realize that all these attacks on our natural God-given right of self-defense must end, we must stand up together, then we will succeed. And I don't need to worry about all the details. I can't fix the world by 3 o'clock, but I can do my part. And that which I can do, I will do. Lol.
Well, Sam, I want your opinion on this. If God wins in the end, why do I need to be concerned? Why do I need to do anything if God wins?
Because He's asked you to. And since you obey God, then you do what He asks. So He says that we should basically come and follow Me, pick up our cross and follow Christ. And Christ taught us the Ten Commandments. Therefore, we need to teach the Ten Commandments. If we pick up our cross, we need to follow the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not kill stands at the center of those Ten Commandments. And needless, unconstitutional, immoral war violates the thou shalt not kill reality. Now, I get that if you're a soldier, sometimes it's not completely your purview to decide what you're going to do or not. So we're not 100% accountable if we're, you know, if governments and armchair quarterbacks are running the show. At the same time, we need to do with all within our power to be peaceful. After all, we follow the Prince of Peace. He says, come follow Me. And so I submit to you that it's up to us to obey the only true King. And since He's asked us to follow the Prince of Peace, I think peaceful activity is our pursuit, sir.
I totally agree, Sam, and I only ask that question because we do have too many people in this country running around thinking that I don't need to do a single thing because I know God's going to win in the end. Well, that's fallacious reasoning, folks. We do need to be involved. We do need to obey the commandments. We do need to follow the Prince of Peace, and we do that by asking our congressmen, why in the world are we still engaged in these wars? Why are we killing, allowing Saudi Arabia to kill people in Yemen and other places around the world? We need to hold them accountable. We need to feel at least a little bit responsible ourselves for all the killing that's going on in the world, Sam.
Amen. God save the Republic of the United States of America. CampaignForLiberty.org and LovingLiberty.net.